It's 12:30. You are live in studio with Kevin here on CKMS 102.7, Rogers Digital 946, and worldwide at RadioWaterloo.ca. And we're about to go live on Facebook, so you're going to do radio with your eyes. And very happy that you're joining me today, and especially happy to have Jennifer and Todd with me in studio. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us, Kevin.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure, and let's give more than first names. So Todd Virko, you're the executive director of Act Out KW?
Artistic director.
Artistic director of Act Out KW. Jennifer Mogbach, you are the choreographer and director of The Lion King Jr., which is one of Act Out KW's productions.
Yes, sir.
So far, I'm doing great. Woo! Okay, so I'm going to ask each of you the same question. Take as much time as you'd like. Don't fight over the mics. Just take us as brief or as long as you'd like, starting with you, Todd. Where were you born, and take us from then to now?
Originally, I'm from Toronto. I grew up in North Toronto. I did my undergrad degree at York University in theater. In the late 80s and early 90s, I had a production company in Toronto called Open Mind Productions with a former production partner of mine, Benj Gallander, who now runs an investment letter and writes for the Globe and Mail. Benj, with a few people, were the founders of the SummerWorks Theater Festival in Toronto, which is still going strong. In 1996, I left Canada and spent a dozen years living in South Korea, teaching at Inje University, teaching Western theater and English as a foreign language. And I came back to Canada in Waterloo in 2008. Did some brief studies at the University of Waterloo, doing some graduate studies in recreation and leisure studies. My focus was on play and learning. And then last January, I took over as artistic director for the Kitchener-Waterloo Children's Drama Workshop, which is shortened to ACT OUT or ACT OUT KW. That would be me.
My name is Jennifer Mogbach, and I am a daughter of a diplomat from Nigeria, so a Nigerian diplomat, and my father was in the Navy. I was born in Nigeria, Lagos to be exact. And from there, my family, because of my mom's job, we moved to Argentina, Buenos Aires. And after that, we moved to Houston, Texas, followed by Ottawa, Canada. We immigrated to Canada in 2011. And then I went off to undergrad at SUNY Purchase Mafia, woot woot. Mm-hmm. I went there I graduated in 2013, and then I worked at the Shakespeare Theatre of New Jersey, followed by coming back home to Canada to work at the Stratford Festival. And then I found myself in the town of Waterloo, and I am currently a choreographer and a director for ACT OUT. And I plan to be attending graduate school back in the States in the fall. So that's me.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing. So does that mean we only have your presence with us here in Waterloo for a few more months? You're going back full time?
Going back full time.
But it's not necessarily permanent.
Kind of, yes. That is the hope. The hope is to be bi-coastal, actually, to be in the States and to be in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you may have said it when you were talking, but I might have missed it. What does SUNY stand for?
State University of New York.
Okay.
At Purchase College.
Okay. I was reading it, and that was what I said. I didn't look it up. I'm like, I'm going to guess that one. But I didn't want to throw it out there. So that's good. So that's a lot of stuff you have going on.
Yeah.
So how did the two of you come together? So you took over, Todd. You've been with ACT OUT KW less than a year?
A little bit more than a year.
A little bit more than a year. And how did Jennifer come into...
Jennifer was previously hired by the previous artistic director, Deanne Bingleman, and you choreographed Elf, if I remember
right. Elf, too.
Anything before that?
Nope, that was my first show.
And then she also choreographed for us Beauty and the Beast last June, and Fiddler on the Roof this past fall. And Jen and I talked about her getting an opportunity to direct for the company, which I'm happy to have her incredible talents, especially since I'm going to be losing her come the end of August. She's doing a fantastic job with Lion King Jr. I was at rehearsal last night, and it's looking and sounding great.
So Lion King Jr., so I'll come back to that in a sec, but let's get a quick mention of what we're talking about for folks. So Lion King Jr. is going to be at the Cambridge Arts Theatre June 5th to June 9th. Folks can get tickets right now at ticketscene.ca. Is there other ways? Is that where they should go?
That's where they should go to get them.
Okay. And let's back up. So that's the play that Jennifer's involved with, both choreography and directing. This is your first directing role for ACT UP KW.
This is my first full-length directing. I've directed short scenes, and I've directed stage readings.
And tell us a bit more about it. How's the experience so far? You're still a few months out from final, from the show date. So what's it like for you so far?
So far, I mean, I'm really fortunate that my first large directing project is The Lion King, because I mean, I'm Nigerian, obviously, I'm African, so when I hear the African drumming, I'm like, I'm home. Yeah. So it feels really, really natural to me. I think the hardest part so far has been time management, because my experience before was just choreographer, right? So when the director was working on something, I was working on something else. So something was always being done. Mm-hmm. As a director, I like being productive, so sometimes something has to take the back seat. Like if I would like to push forward with scene study and scene work, I have to step back and say, this big number needs to be worked. It needs to be, you know, choreographed. It needs to be, you know, rehearsed. Mm-hmm. So it's just time management, finding a way to give both things, both hats, you know, wear both hats equally.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how many people then, if you're playing those two roles on a given day, how many other people are actively, besides the actors themselves, are actively like on set?
Well, we have 35 kids at the moment. So it's a mixture of, right now it's me doing the directing and the choreography, but we also have
a music director.
And we are splitting our time. So when I'm not using the kids for dancing or scenes, I send them over, or the older kids, I have them step up. We have some great upperclassmen that are constantly stepping up and saying, hey, Jen, can I help in any way? And I say, yes, please. Can you take these actors and run scenes? Mm-hmm. So it's all like, that's the point of theater, right? It's a community. And mm-hmm. I think everyone knows that they have to help each other out. So okay. That's kind of how we're working. We're all just moving forward and doing the best we can to be as, you know, productive as possible.
So help me get a picture in my head, Todd, of the theater. So taking now that scenario of what Jennifer's talking about, where are you fitting in? You're obviously not in on necessarily the stage at that very moment. Where does your role fit in all this?
Well, ACT UP as a company, we service the children of the Waterloo region. We run camps, workshops, and productions to children 5 to 17 years old. Mm-hmm. We do 5 full-scale productions a year. By full-scale, I mean including props and costumes and sound and lights, and we put them in a theater. Our season this year, we did Fiddler on the Roof Jr. at the Registry Theater in November, and then we did Don't Mention My Name at the Kitchener-Waterloo Little Theater in February. Our next show I'm directing is Midsummer Night's Dream. It's actually the company's first Shakespeare. And we're doing it at the Waterloo Park Band Shell, May 15th to the 19th. And then come June, we do a June musical, which is a double bill. The main feature is Lion King Jr., but we also have what's called a mini kids production, which is for children 6 to 10. Mm-hmm. And that's called Seussical Kids, which is a scaled down version of Seussical the Musical. And that works as a half hour opening piece for The Lion King. The company has been in existence since 1995, and we do March break camps and summer camps, and as well as standalone workshops. But the main focus of the company is our productions. And we have an extensive costume collection of about 5,000 to 7,000 pieces that have been collected over the years. We also construct them as we need them for new shows as we do them. Like Lion King Jr. has a tremendous amount of new material that's being built, especially by Paula Cardinal, who's a volunteer mother who does exceptional work for
she's
the company.
She's amazing.
Yeah. And some of the things that she's coming up for the animals of the savannah and the jungle is just absolutely incredible what she's been able to do for us.
The amount of creativity that comes out of her hands.
Yeah.
I'm always like, Paula, where, how? I know Pinterest isn't responsible. This is all you. Yeah. She's great. And she's so wonderful and open to work with. I mean, so like going back to like the collaborative process of theater, right? Mm-hmm. It's always like, how can I get what's living in my brain as a director out and have someone understand, digest, and give me what I want? And that's exactly what's happening with Paula. She sometimes gives me things that I didn't even know were possible, which is having someone doing all that without being paid is a blessing, you know?
Yeah, and she does incredible work. She's a very talented individual. We're very lucky to have her. And we're very lucky that the company has been able to maintain its costume collection over the years.
So, that's an incredible number. Is that something that the company has ever thought of doing, like almost a showcase of costumes at some point in terms of a... I don't know whether it be in a fundraiser capacity or just as a...
I don't think we've ever thought about doing a showcase. Our showcases are our production.
Sure.
Things come out and what's gets used. We do rent them from time to time to other theater companies. And
you must have some masterpieces of things that maybe haven't been out and seen the light of day since they were used in the last production they were in.
Perhaps. We're currently going through actually an inventory of our collection and trying to get things a little bit organized. So it's something perhaps for me to put in the back of my brain.
Did you guys ever do Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat?
Yes. We've done about 55 shows before I took over the company. I'm just trying to find my list of them all.
I should have told you to bring costumes to the radio show. That's such an obvious thing. It'll show you where some of my theater thoughts go. But as soon as you talk about all the costumes, I immediately thought of the Seinfeld episode where Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat is part of the storyline, and Kramer starts wearing the actual coat down the street and is parading it down. So that's what came to mind. I'm like, oh, there's got to be some awesome stuff in there.
Some of the highlights of our history would be Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Frankenstein, Into the Woods, James and the Giant Peach, last year's Beauty and the Beast, last year's Elf. Seussical has been done as a junior production. Now we're doing a kid's version of it. There's just been a tremendous number of shows that have been performed over the years.
And just looking back at like all those different shows that he's described, I'm thinking of all the costumes. There's such a huge range of different things. Like if you're comparing James and the Giant Peach versus Seussical, I can only imagine it's like, I'm thinking of the creativity you have to take pieces from one show, break them down in order to create pieces for another show. It's just like, there's so much creativity involved. It's pretty cool.
And of course, key point to keep in mind as we're chatting here, so that all of your actors, this is Children's Drama Workshop, so everybody is between the age of 17 and...
Five
and 17, so you have actors in full production.
And it's mandated in the company, we can't have actors older than that.
Okay.
So, like, even if I had a part for an old woman, that's got to be played by a young girl or a young boy that's taking on the role. All of the actors have to be between 5 and 17. We aim to teach drama and theater to the children of the Waterloo region.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been doing since 1995.
Which is fantastic. I want to ask you a little bit about Don't Mention My Name, which is the show that I saw. So that was the last production. I went and saw that. That's the last one you've had.
That was our senior intensive for this year. The senior intensive is for slightly older actors of the company, usually 13 to 17.
Okay.
And it's a slightly more intensive rehearsal process, getting more into the challenges and the meat of acting, a little bit more of an advanced study for some of the actors than they might get used to in some of the shows, plus we'll do slightly more mature material than perhaps some of our other shows. We are a children's theater company, so we have to tone down certain things, but with the senior intensive, we can do some high school age topics and things like that.
Right. So you'll have some difference between, say, a musical and a little bit more.
Absolutely. Sure. Last year, our mini kids drama was Alice in the Wonderland, which opened for Beauty and the Beast, and it was a scaled-down version aimed at children 6 to 10.
Right,
and
right.
Seussical Kids is a scaled-down version aimed at children 6 to 10.
Now, because they're kids, I should ask this first. Can we talk about any of the actors, and don't mention my name? Because I want to give a shout-out. I don't have to mention their name.
I think just for security, let's not mention their names, but if you want to talk about the character names, that's fine.
Yes. I mean, so that show I went to see with no real knowledge of what to expect from Act Out. That was my first experience as a patron. But it was great on so many levels, and I assume this is a lot of what you're trying to get out of it. Is one, it was my first time at the KW Little Theater, which I'd heard of and seen from the outside, but it completely blew my mind.
That's a great theater.
It's such a good space.
It is so, somebody described it to me to a T, two different people in fact, but yet when I walked in and sat down, I'm like, this is not, it's exactly what was described to be, but not at all what I expected, what I created in my mind.
It's an underused jewel of Waterloo. It really is.
It was, the intimacy into the play was what I really liked. You know, without intrusiveness, I didn't feel intimidated by the actors, but they were there, right in front of me. The character they were all good, by the way. That was a great. So the whole cast I enjoyed, but the fellow that
Paul Miles.
Paul, but I'm like, what if that's the guy's real name? But the character Paul, the actor that played Paul, blew me away. They were all great, but that one, he was fun. I just wanted to have more. Once he first popped out, I'm like, okay, let's just have him have more and more lines.
Here's the secret about that actor. He really likes doing voices, and he really likes doing characterization.
Okay.
And if you recall from that, there's a number of telephone calls.
Yeah.
He did the voices for all of the telephone calls for us as well.
I would never have known that. Would never have known. He seemed very fantastic. Now, not knowing his background specifically, but how much of that was him bringing his talent and you guys working with it versus the theater and the work together sort of brings this out and matures the actor, or is it both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, we certainly, with the senior intensive, when I was directing it, I pride myself as being a director's actor. I, especially in the theater, work very hard at getting them to understand characterization and the physicality of their roles and the gestures of the work that they do. And we did a lot of exercises on physicality and gesture work and characterization. Plus, acting, there's an old saying that acting isn't so much acting but reacting, learning to listen to the people that you're working with on stage and reacting to each other. So it's the one great character really needs the other character to play off of properly. Jennifer did a lot of work in our rehearsal there. Do you have any thoughts on some of the character work you did with the kids in that show?
In the beginning of the rehearsal, we started talking about what gesture is, and something that I find very important to my work as an actor is psychological gestures. So understanding that before we know how to do anything within our bodies, we already have those tools. Mm-hmm. So connecting what the brain associates with anger, with finding what it physically wants to do with anger, or with sadness, or with ambition, or with happiness. So I worked a lot. I assisted directed on the show, and when they were working on scene works, I would take on specific scenes, I would take some of the actors and we would work on gestures. So something simple physically that the actor would do that would not only bring them back to their character, but also help them push through and remember who they are physically in the play. Mm-hmm. And there were so many wonderful things that were happening, but the thing that I think as an educator and as a director that I loved was these kids are at an age where I think kids are scared to even try at this mm-hmm. age. They're either like fearful or they're too cool for school, right? It's just like, oh, I don't want to be wrong. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, I don't want to look like I'm trying too hard. Okay. These kids jumped in mm-hmm. and the actor that played Paul Miles, he jumped in immediately. And he jumped in not only with his mind, but jumped in physically, mm-hmm. but also vocally. Like he mm-hmm. was starting to find things and explore different places where Paul could live immediately. I'm like, that's amazing. Sometimes you can't get professional actors to jump in like that, right? They tippy toe in there because mm-hmm. no one wants to fail. So these kids had this ability to be fearless about failing from the very beginning, which is something you can't teach, and something that if it's there, if you have a good director, like I genuinely think Todd is, mm-hmm. you bring that out in actors. And I think that was happening in the room from an early point in the rehearsal process, people being fearful, not being fearful about failing right. and trying.
Quite honestly, too, and this has absolutely nothing to do with me. There's a culture of the company that was there before I took over the company. And it's a beautiful culture of the older actors in the company really take it upon themselves to mentor the younger actors in the company. Mm-hmm. They will, you see it especially with when we're doing a show as large as Lion King, where there's 34 performers that a number of them are new to the company.
Yeah.
But the older company members have all reached out to them, draw them in. You can see it when we take breaks that there aren't little fiefdoms or cliques of actors. Yeah. They all get together in one big group, even without our instruction. They just glom together as one big unit. And there's a tremendous culture of support from the actors, especially to the newer, the younger actors in the company, that there's this passing of the baton that's mm-hmm. been going on for years throughout the company. And again, that's the culture of the company. That has nothing to do with me, and it's something that I certainly hope not to mess up over the years.
It's so wonderful. It's so inspiring to see kids know that that is their rite of passage, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like when kids start to get to the age where there's people younger than them in the act out tradition, you start seeing them take on, be kinder. Okay. You see them be more specific with the things they do. You see them reaching out to people that are struggling. And I think if there's anything act out is quite wonderful for, is teaching young students, young actors, to show compassion to other people when they're not as familiar with something that they are. So that's something that gives me, it gives me butterflies as a human being. And I see that in so many of the other older kids, and it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's obviously the core mission of Act Out would be to get young kids into acting, but there's so much more. It's really teaching them, you know, values and how to behave in the greater world when they get out there.
Theater especially is very much a community and communal art form. Although you could, in theory, do the written, directed, and starring me show.
Yeah.
Most theater productions, it is a great family of artists, both the actors and the production staff, the behind-the-scenes personnel, the costumers, the dressers, the lighting technicians. It is creating one big community of artists that work together. And it's something that you don't really find in other art forms quite to the extent that you do in theater. It is really a great way of making family. Mm-hmm. And each production that comes together as a family.
The thing that I notice the most about theater making specifically is the fact that you learn that there's so many different people needed to create one thing.
Right.
So like in sports, you do have that idea of, you know, a community within your, you know, your other teammates. But in theater, you start realizing that the person making your costumes and the person being the lead of the play and the person helping you put on your clothes during production all work together. They're okay. all as important to make the whole. So that's something that I think is completely transferable in life in general.
Yeah.
Like if you are very like tunnel visioned in your career or in something, it's very important to be open and available to seeing how your life is not only about you, but yeah. there's multiple things that create the things that you do and the life that you live and the choices that you make, mm-hmm. right? We're all part of this huge community. And I think there, I don't think there's any other thing that teaches you that. There's no other mm-hmm. medium, no other hobby, no other thing that gives you that mentality that I think is essential as a human being.
Yeah.
It's also the craft of acting is such that people need to get in touch with their own emotions. And in order to do that, you need to be in a safe space.
Right.
That you need to know that I'm going to explore something. If I got to cry in this scene, I'm going to be touching on areas that are sensitive myself. So the people around me need to be a source of comfort. That it has to be a safe area for you to be able to actually perform properly. And that actors in any company learn that you can trust the people around you, and it creates a nice environment that way mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
So how do kids typically end up as part of ACT OUT?
I think we recruit a lot through our camps.
Okay.
We do an extensive series of summer camps. This summer we're doing 2 weeks at the St. John's Lutheran Church, and we're also holding 2 weeks of camps at the Kitchener-Waterloo Little Theatre. Now, in our camps, it's mostly process rather than product, meaning the finished product of theatre, a stage play, is nice, but it's the process of creating it that really is the important thing, especially in a camp. So it's a lot of drama games, a lot of dramatic activities, script writing, and there is the creating of a finished production, but it's not quite as serious as some of our main stage plays. It's more about the process of getting there than the okay. actual finished product. It's also a good way for people that don't really know what theater or drama is to get their feet wet and see whether it's for them. And,
right.
So we do end up recruiting a lot through our summer camps. There's also, quite honestly, our actors are our best our recruiters because
right.
they tell their friends that we're a great company and that they should become involved. And that's where we get a lot of our newer members.
So parents, for instance, that are like, okay, I don't know if my kids should be in acting or not.
I would suggest take a summer camp. It's a good way for them to find out whether they like the environment of ACT OUT. I would suggest that parents that want to find out about us go to our website, which is www.actoutkw.com, and
mm-hmm.
There's some information there about the programs or workshops that we offer. We announce our next season in June, and I'm not going to be giving anybody a sneak preview of what are the plays that I'm planning to do today.
But well, we jump on the website in June to find out.
Jump on the website in June, and we have an announcement party as a part of a cast party for Lion King and Seussical Kids. The exact date hasn't been decided, but it'll probably be about a week or two after Lion King comes down, so I would say around June 20th. Thereabouts, we'll have an announcement party, and then it goes on the website.
Okay. Let me recap just briefly. I'm going to play a song for Jennifer. I can't remember now if her eyes just lit up. I don't remember for sure if this was from Jennifer, so she knows about it, or was to Jennifer. Game winner. Does that mean something? No?
Play it. Let's hear.
Okay, so we'll play that in a minute.
And of course I know what it is.
Okay,
and
I,
yes. Yes.
I don't, and I'm
it's a great song, guys.
Okay, that's good. So we'll play that in one sec. But just to recap, you guys have so much stuff going on. So the next is the next production, Midsummer's Night Dream.
That is our next play, yes.
So that's May 15th to 19th. And periodically, for all our fine friends that are only listening on radio, periodically I'm switching our Facebook Live feed to showcase some of the posters. So if you run on over to Facebook, if you're not there now, the Midsummer Night's Dream poster is up. So that's May. But of course, if you're driving, don't launch your Facebook and try to see it. I'll read it to you. So relax, keep driving. May 15th to 19th at the Waterloo Park Bandshell. That's Midsummer's Night Dream, the first Shakespeare play by Act Out KW.
It is.
And the tickets are available at ticketscene.ca. And of course, any just like all other Act Out productions, you can follow them through actoutkw.com, Twitter Act Out KW, and Facebook Act Out KW. So that's Midsummer's Night Dream. And then Jennifer's full stage directorial debut, but she's also choreographing. And of course, tons of other people are doing a bunch of great stuff. It's not just about Jennifer, but is The Lion King Jr., June 5th to June 9th at the Cambridge Arts Theater with Seussical Kids as the opening show. And that tickets are also available at ticketscene.ca. So let's play game winner, and we will come back and chat a bit more with Jennifer Mogbuck and Todd Verko of Act Out KW on In Studio with Kevin.
Right, we're going to try and find game winner in another place. It doesn't appear to want to play for us on our live radio show, but that's all right. I'm not going
to
get. That's right. Which is
okay.
The fun.
It's time to vamp. We got to vamp now.
Oh dear. That's a theater term. Vamping.
Yes.
Okay. Nothing like vaping.
No.
Anything to do with vampires?
No. It's filling in dialogue for somebody. Usually that they missed their entrance or something that didn't go. So you just got to figure out something to fill the space.
Yep. And you're lucky that we are speaking in contemporary speech, because if it was a classical show, you'd have to vamp in verse.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, do it.
Oh, I'm not good at it. I'm horrible at it. But I've seen someone vamp for good 5 to 6 minutes in verse.
Oh, my.
He's amazing. He won an award that year because it was just like, you deserve all the awards.
Sure.
So could one consider vamping sort of like the precursor to freestyle rap, for instance?
No, freestyle is you.
You know you're going to be doing it ahead of time?
Vamping is you didn't know you had that free space and you got to use your noggin to make it work
right. And
fill it. Freestyle is you have an objective and you have to find the words. Like it's just.
Okay.
It's not the same, but it deals with improvisation. So it's really improv.
I remembered from, and I can't remember where it was specifically, but I remember somebody telling me, I think it was when I was my wedding. And somebody had said, you know, the advice I would give you is whatever you're doing, at some point, something is going to go wrong. Just ignore it and don't mention it because nobody probably realizes anything's going wrong except for you. So just carry on. Nobody will know, and it'll look perfect. Whereas if you draw attention, of course, now. And thankfully, I think the person that was telling me had some story about a bride and groom, and one of them literally fell over right when they were up at the front, and something happened. And so I said, well, that one you can't really pretend that was meant to happen, but general little stuff you can. So
I know some choreographers that say, even if you fall, there's a way to, you know, physically vamp, right? If you fall, just turn around, twist around, get around, get up, you know?
I meant to do that, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Years ago, I was stage managing a show in Toronto, and the stage was a black box stage to the point that they had to black off the booth so that the people that were running sound and lights could not actually see the theater.
Wow.
And so I was calling cues, and my lighting person made a small error at the end of the first act, where instead of the house lights coming up, this single spot on the center of the stage came up. And as I said to her, as I'm looking at it, can you check your lighting board? And she started to get panicked. And I said, don't worry about it. People think it's art. Just bring up the light slowly.
There you go.
And it's a single spot. It's meaningful. The director meant that.
Oh my gosh. As soon as you said single spot, I'm like, oh, what's the art behind it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Speaking of which, let's listen to Game Winner from Wolfpack. Did I say that right?
Wolfpack.
All right, and we'll be back.
It's not over, babe. I'll hit the Game Winner. Baby, believe in me. I'll hit the Game Winner. Baby, believe in me. Take a chance on me, take a chance on me.
I'm ready to let it fly.
I can make anything.
I've been dreaming of this all my life.
It will mean everything to me.
Give me the ball,
I'll hit the Game Winner. Baby, don't you give up. I'll hit the Game Winner.
Take a chance on me.
Baby, believe in me. I'll hit the Game Winner.
Take a chance on me.
Baby, believe in me. Take a chance on me. Take a chance on me. We can do cause this is where I make my money, baby. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. We've been down before.
We've been down before.
What you wanna do?
What you wanna
do? 5 seconds left. You gon' run this time. Right then and there.
Ball.
I'll hit the Game Winner. Baby, don't give up on me. I'll hit the Game Winner.
Take a chance on me.
Baby, believe in me.
I'll
hit the Game Winner.
And that was Game Winner. So we played that for Jennifer. Was that a request of yours, Jennifer? Is
yes,
that like one of your
was.
Favorite songs?
I was working at a coffee shop not too long ago, and one of the girls I was working with, she put that on, and I was just like, This is my soulmate. This is my soulmate via music. And now I'm madly in love with the band. The person singing is actually not part of Wolfpack. It's another artist that they brought in. They do a lot of like funk meets like crazy kind of like fairy-like instrumentals. Like it's all over the place. And that's where my heart gravitates. Things that are like magical, but like still soulful. Like I think that's my essence too.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. So thank you for sharing that. I want to delve into a couple different areas. I'll ask you in advance to make sure at the end that we do come back and just cover off the act out. I want to make sure we get the information out in terms of the shows in case we veer too far off. But I wanted to ask you a little bit, Todd, about a side project of yours, your fun learning website.
Tesla Games.
Yes.
TeslaGames.com.
It is most interesting. Tell us about that.
Well, that actually came out of, I did my my master's at Teachers College at Columbia University. And my master's was in instructional technology and media, which is teaching for teaching with computers. And my thesis was on games and language learning. And since I discovered so much information, I thought I might as well share it with the world. Educators, more than most people, we work in isolation. The teacher teaching their class is often the only person teaching their class. So getting new information or finding about new ways of doing things is always a bit of a challenge. And so as a side project, I thought I might as well take what I know and put it out there for the rest of the English teachers in the world with looking to introduce and play games and drama into their language classrooms.
So it's TESOL, T-E-S-O-L game.com.
TESOL is an acronym to anybody who works in the English language profession that's teaching English to speakers of other languages.
Okay.
The international organization, one of the international organizations that governs teaching is TESOL. There's also TESL, which is T-E-S-L, which is teaching English to speakers of languages. Then there's also, I've been out of the world for a while, I'm forgetting all of the groups now, IATEFL, which is the International Association of Teachers of Foreign Languages. Those are the main bodies that govern language teaching around the world. But so I took TESL Games as for those that are in the world, they'll recognize the acronym. Mm-hmm. Out of the world, not so much, but those in the world will recognize it.
Of course, you're speaking not of the world in the complete world sense, not
in the
aliens
the world,
versus
the world
humans.
Of language teaching,
of
yes.
course. And but so basically for us not in that world, but it's a way of using games to teach people English as when it's not their primary language.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a very strong proponent of play and play-based learning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Plato once said that you can learn more from a person in an hour of play than in a year of conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that that's very true. Mm-hmm. That when we are playing, we are most ourselves.
Yeah.
And we are most open to experience. And when we're children, play is the work of children. It's what we do to learn. And I think that's often forgotten in education today. What is also forgotten the word magister ludi, which is a master of games, is Latin, and it means master of games. It also is what teachers used to be called, because play and learning were considered the same thing.
Mm.
And that's something we've forgotten. That's why I don't call myself the president of TESL Games. I'm the magister ludi of TESL Games. I'm the master of games.
Then. Well, which is great. So TESLGames.com. I can share with you at least at the early childhood level in the curriculums in Ontario, that is definitely coming back. Mm-hmm. There's been some advancements. A lot of it's very. It gives hope because the direction seems to be shifting there, although there's, a few things we probably recognize is change at a government or an institutional level that's not very quick. And there's always resistance from the folks that are maybe not, that are in the system that don't see it that way. So it is happening at the early child level. At least on a curriculum basis, there's a lot that I've seen where they're looking outwards too at other countries and seeing, hey, you know what? They're doing it this way. What's common about whatever different ways is play is very critical, central.
Here's what's confusing the educators' world in North mm-hmm. America, especially administrators and parents. Currently, the country that is ranking the highest in all standardized tests mm-hmm. across all disciplines, math, sciences, language, is Finland.
Okay.
And everybody's looking at Finland and trying to figure out why. But if you look at their curriculum, There are a few reasons why. Number one, they don't give homework. Number two, they shorten their school day. Number three, they encourage kids to play more.
Right.
And also, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but it's either Finland or Denmark that is removing standardized testing in general.
Yeah. Finland dropped that years ago. Mm. It's just...
But yet they score higher.
Because when you allow people to play, it opens their mind to new questions and new ideas. And so we traditionally have sent kids home with books and armed with homework, and they're frustrated and they go home and they don't want to do their homework and they almost shut down. Whereas if you send the kid home with their lessons from the day and they go climb a tree, and then all of a sudden they wonder why the leaves grow that way, and that brings their question into the science class the next day, and it opens their mind for whatever they want to learn.
It's stuff that, I mean, sitting here you could think is so obvious, so intuitive. There are definitely, but it's certainly not a universally held position. There are tons of people that yearn for that, you know, that standard, that traditional way. So unfortunately it doesn't, the wave doesn't go as quickly. Speaking from my interactions with the school system and homework and things like that, I'm happy to say that there's less and less homework every year, which, like I said, I'm fine with. But it's definitely not universal. Not every teacher embraces it the same way, although most do, but certainly not parents. I can tell you there's some parents that are in, they want to be, have their kids brought up the way they were brought up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, I'm about 180 degrees. I'm so opposed, I'm 360 degrees. Never mind.
And there are tiger moms of every culture that are going to sit their kids down at the end of this day and make them do whatever. Mm-hmm. Their spelling lessons or their math lessons.
There's probably a whole show there. I know myself, I naturally gravitate to amusement or to play, to fun. So, and if I can put both together, to me that's a bonus. If I'm in sort of the grocery store and I see the price of two different things that are two different sizes, which one's the better deal? There's a fun math game I can play with my kids. Mm. And, I can quickly also tell a lot of things just by the way whether they'll answer me or run away and go in some other aisle. Or how quick they'll answer, but also they'll answer and go, why are you asking me that? That's obvious. Okay, then you've mastered that skill. You understand comparison. You understand a whole bunch of mathematical concepts and how they could have applied in a real life situation. And you don't even necessarily even view it that way. That was homework to me, or a learning experience. But so
back in the 1980s, I was teaching for the Toronto Board of Education. I was teaching gifted kids games. Mostly I was teaching Dungeons and Dragons.
Ooh.
And it would be very fascinating to me that otherwise average students that may not be self-motivated to do something would play Dungeons and Dragons and would want to go home and research medieval history, would want to go home and write a story about their character that they're playing in the game, and would come back and bring it to me. And these would be self-directed exercises, which to me then is play.
Right.
They're learning from that. And that was the benefit of the games education that I was doing back then.
Absolutely. It's really something. Jennifer, thanks, Todd. Jennifer, so you've done some acting outside of theater. And we were talking, I guess maybe we could talk a bit about this to give it some context, but I was asking you before about the differences between live theater, where pretty much, I mean, there's loads and loads of pre-work and rehearsal and everything happening. But once you go on stage, you're going on stage, it's live, whatever happens, that's the show this evening, which is the magic of it to me. I've gone to shows more than once of the same, run, 1-3 days apart. It's a slightly different show because sometimes there's some ad libs, sometimes there's a mistake, and I'm putting up my quotation marks here on radio. Mistake meaning that's not what we wanted to happen, but watching it, I'm like, I only know that because I saw it two nights ago and I know that thing didn't fall. But otherwise, I don't. So there's that whole experience. But you've done film, TV acting which to me is diametrically opposed. How would you, what's it like from the actor's side, the differences?
I'm a theater kid through and through. So my experience, it's like comparing one bar on a cell phone versus fully charged, you know, that's how I compare my experience with okay. screen versus theater. But from what I do have from film, it's the difference starts in as little as the waiting period. So in theater, you're waiting in, let's say, the green room.
Right.
It's already a community, right? You're talking and you're maybe running lines, or maybe you're just talking about your day and you are part of this community of either the whole artistic team or just the group of actors in the entire show or just the group of actors within your scene.
Right.
So overall, there's a community versus in film and screen work, you're in your trailer. You're separated. The rehearsal process is very different. In theater, we do table reads and we do, you know, we talk about each scene, we break it down, and we, in a really wonderful theater room, everyone has an input with what's going on in the scene. So okay. you get to see people filter the text or people filter the story in different versions, right? The way that you see a line can be completely different than the way that I see a line.
Right.
So you get to see different perspectives. In screen work, it's usually you come on set and you're ready to go. It's rare that you have that breakdown moment. And that is my experience with television.
Okay.
When it comes to independent movies or full-length features or short, sometimes there is a conversation, but overall is nowhere close to the amount of discussing and just communicating about what it is to make this certain piece that you find in theater.
So it sounds like you're describing a much drier, isolated experience. Where
I wouldn't say drier, and because it's a different genre.
Okay.
Creating work for the screen and creating work for the theater is completely different. So I think it's unfair to compare because it's apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that if you're a person that enjoys figuring out the world of a play or figuring out the world of a story, then theater will scratch that itch.
Right.
Versus if you are more of an independent explorer, like if you take a script and you actually like stepping back and going, I wonder why that is the way that it is. Film is definitely going to scratch that itch.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Kind of.
I'm
coming at you really from the consumer of the content perspective.
Okay, so from the consumer of the content, theater, you work together to create it.
Yeah.
Film, there's different people that put different things together. Like for instance, me and our assistant, our stage manager for The Lion King,
yes.
She has a background in production for the camera. And I have my background in theater. And she was telling me, she says that in her opinion, the only time that everyone comes together to celebrate the creation of the thing that you're creating, so the creation of the film, is at the cast party. And that's at the very end. Versus in theater, that whole introduction happens on the very first day.
Right.
Right? You come together, you say, hi, I'm the assistant director. Hi, I'm the SM. Hi, I'm the actor. That community thing happens from the beginning. That is the foundation of the entire creation process. Versus in film, it's not always that way. It is, I don't want to say a cog, but in a way it is mm-hmm. different elements that work separately.
Right.
And then after, when the finished product happens, then they come together. So they start, their creation start at opposite ends.
With ending up in the same as a, you know, if it's done well, a beautifully created, coherent piece of art for the masses or for the audience to consume. You described it, Todd, when we were talking about that earlier, sort of as film is a director's...
Theater is an actor's medium, film is a director's medium, and television is a producer's medium.
Yeah.
Meaning that the actor has the most control and the most opportunity to shine in theater. Although directors still have their job, they're not as necessary to the creation of theater. Film, it's very much the director's medium, where it's the director that gets to determine the angle of the shot, whether this is shot in close-up or whether it's shot in distance. The actor has less control over what they can do with their part. It's also, in terms of acting, theater, stage acting, and film acting are very, very, very different animals, just because of the closeness of the camera and the distance of the audience in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you would perform a role for the camera is much more reserved. If you were to perform that way on stage, nobody would ever notice. If you were to perform the way that you do on stage as a part of a film, it will come across as over-exaggerated. Now, that could
be a good
style. And some, I'm thinking of the film, actually, off the top of my head, Hotel Budapest, where there are elements of that where it's very extravagant acting. It's almost theatrical acting. There is still some film acting. Jennifer's disagreeing with me, which she's entitled to do.
Of course. I have a really, really good friend, and he is a director.
Okay.
He's a DP. So director of photography, and he also does a lot of words are not coming out of my mouth right now. He does camera work, essentially. And we were having a conversation about concept. Going back to what Todd's saying, Wes Anderson in general is the director of the Grand Budapest Hotel, and he does different Fantastic Mr. Fox and a lot of different films, so screen work that can be seen as dramatic, but in my opinion, they're more dramatic in concept. The style of acting is still the same way, because overall, in general, if you have an audience right in front of your face, the way you communicate is going to be very different than if you have an audience across a field.
Okay.
Your voice, your body, your expressions have to be bigger, because the final objective is to connect. So the way that I connect with you across the room is very different than I connect with someone across the field.
Right.
And also you're a person that is adapting to your circumstances. So my circumstances with film is that I have a very close proximity, and I have to make sure that I'm not overpowering, and you see, and I'm honest about what you would genuinely do with someone that's right in front of you.
Right.
Versus in theater, if I do something small, the person, you know, if you have a 500 seater, the person in the back row, you still need to connect. So that means that you're going to adapt. You're going to be bigger. You're going to be stronger vocally. Your body movements are going to be big, right?
Mm-hmm.
My upbringing is in theater. So even the way that I communicate as a person is very, very big, you know? So you're just adapting. But I think Wes Anderson and that kind of thing, or just film screen work that can be seen as theatrical, I think it's mostly based in the concept being theatrical. But the style of acting, it's very different. There's film acting, there's theater acting. They can merge. A theater actor doesn't always have to only be a theater actor. They can be a film actor. But in general, I think they're two very different things.
Mm-hmm. And that's something, I guess, which I guess is part of the point, is that, coming from the audience perspective, hopefully none of those things really matter in the end, and that the person is sort of taken away and goes off on a journey with you for that period of time, which I think does cross all those, you know, different types. So we, believe it or not, are coming up to the end of an hour. It just goes...
That was quick.
Which always is a great thing, because I have so many more questions, and which for me is, I consider a successful show. So thank you very much for that. So let's conclude just with a wrap up of what we've got coming up next. Todd or Jennifer, Todd, why don't you tell us about the next show, and then Jennifer, you can tell us about your show.
The next show is at the Waterloo Park Bandshell. It is A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is Shakespeare's probably most beloved comedy. It's a very nice, light, humorous piece of theater. I've got a fantastic cast that are excited to perform. We're looking forward to doing not only our first Shakespeare, but our first outdoor show. And that should be a tremendous experience. You can pick up tickets on ticketscene.ca or come and take a look at our website at actoutkw.com and find more information about the company and our plays. And then come June.
Jennifer.
Come June.
Come June.
June the 5th through the 9th, we will be having a wonderful experience through the African savannah in The Lion King Jr. I think it's safe to say that most people know the show, have watched, most people aren't familiar with the show, but have watched the movie. And it's pretty much the same thing, except there are different songs that you may not be accustomed to because they're part of the stage production. But overall, I think it's a story that connects to everyone. I think kids will love the costumes and the singing, and parents will enjoy watching their children happy, but above all, understanding these themes that I think are very universal. Loss, family, friendship, I mean, the circle of life. I mean, little kids get it, and older kids get it, and adults understand. It's something for everyone. So The Lion King Jr. at the Cambridge Arts Center, June 5th through the 9th. Come, because it's going to be wonderful.
Wonderful. And tickets also available for that on ticketscene.ca. This has been In Studio with Kevin on CKMS 102.7 Radio Waterloo.